The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition, where on this episode we're going to talk about ABLE accounts, sometimes called 529A accounts. They're ABLE accounts, A-B-L-E. And we'll speak about the rules, the advantages and disadvantages that they might have versus special needs trusts. So that's the hot topic on today's Retirement and IRA Show. Jim's here. He just put his headphones on. If you find this topic dry and boring, it's because Jim picked it.
It's not going to be dry and boring. It may not apply to everyone, but to the people it applies to, it will.
They're interesting always and fascinating because people underestimate the amount of rules.
Right, and this will apply to the listeners who do have special needs children. And this topic, I had mentioned when I got back from the Ed Slot group that we spent a lot of time talking about ABLE accounts and how they interact with special needs trusts, and I had said I was going to do a show on them. Well, Joe, Marketing Joe, not Tax Joe, who writes everything on iTunes for us, we don't do it, we're too busy working, she normally listens to our podcasts and then figures out what the hell it is we talked about and then writes her little write-up about it. She confesses she didn't do that. She just clicked on one part of the podcast where I just happened to say, we're going to be talking about ABLE accounts and how they interact with special needs trusts. Mm. She didn't hear the part where I said, on a future show, and she just assumed that's what we talked about. She confesses she wrote that. So remember, we got some emails right from people saying, hey, thanks. You ranted about fees again on that right show, and you didn't talk about ABLE accounts or special needs trusts.
Well, so today's the day.
Today's the day. Joe does apologize. She will not do that again. And today is the day we're going to go over ABLE accounts and how they interact with special needs trusts. Today's show is going to be a little bit different, though. I'm going to be using my notes. I'm not an expert on ABLE accounts and special needs trusts.
These are not as common as other types of accounts that we deal with on a regular basis. But for the people who can benefit from these accounts, it's important to know the rules and how you can take advantage of these accounts for the benefit of your family and your special needs child.
Exactly. So I learned a lot on this part, and this is why I belong to the Ed Slot group. So I have copious amounts of notes written in this book that is our study book, and I'm literally going to be reading my notes and reading a lot of what the Slot group has written as we walk through this. And I'm just kind of, on this podcast, folks, I'm just trying to share with you some things that I studied. I am not on this show, and neither is Chris, trying to pretend we are experts in ABLE and special needs trusts, ABLE accounts and special needs trusts. We're not, but I did learn an awful lot about them, specifically how they interact with each other, and I was kind of intrigued by it. And I just thought our listeners could benefit from it. So if you hear me pausing or if you hear me talking, actually making it sound like I know what I'm talking about, it's because I'm reading verbatim from Ed's notes that he has been so kind as to give us. So I think people will find this interesting. Even if you don't have a special needs child, you may know someone with one or someday meet someone who has a special needs child, and you might be able to answer some questions for them. So let's begin with... And Chris, you're going to have to get me. There's no way I'm going to make it through this show without some water.
Oh.
Is that been opened?
This is a full, regular, fresh bottle of water.
You didn't put your lips on that or anything?
Nope.
Okay. For those who don't know, and no one will know because you haven't heard from me all week, I have something wrong with me yet again, and I feel like I'm falling apart.
You know, it's welcome to aging.
Oh, my Lord. So anyways, the doctor originally told me he thought I had, what is it he said? I thought I had burning mouth syndrome.
Something I had never heard.
I never even heard of the damn thing before. So I Googled it and looked, and it's pretty damn depressing. And I was thinking, I hope I don't have that. But I finally decided, well, instead of dealing with Dr. Google and talking to my doctor over the phone, I went down and saw him was it yesterday or the day before? I can't remember. Hour and a half
yesterday.
I was in there with him. Mm-hmm. And now he's not overly convinced it is burning mouth syndrome. I got the, gee, I don't really know what the hell this is. But he has prescribed some medicine to me. The whole point is, folks, I'm having a very painful time talking. And my tongue hurts excessively. And I spend my entire day
talking.
That's my job here, is mm-hmm. to talk. And I almost didn't do this podcast. I really didn't. And I just thought, no, let me try to get through it. It'll be the last thing I do.
Then you can sit silently for the weekend.
For the weekend, exactly. Mm-hmm. Although I am going to go hiking on Sunday.
Just don't talk.
I don't plan to. But the doctor said that would be very good. He thinks a lot of it is, I don't know, I don't want to get into what he thinks it is. But it's very painful, so he's given me lidocaine.
What?
Lidocaine.
I know what that is, but you put that in your mouth?
Yeah, and let me tell you, it numbs you up.
Yeah, don't you bite your tongue all the time and stuff?
No, I don't. I haven't yet. I'm only putting a teaspoon in there, and I don't keep it in very long. I don't know how long I'm supposed to keep it in. But
it's got to taste terrible.
Oh, my Lord. It is the worst tasting stuff. And I told Joe and Shauna down there. They know when I'm in there because they hear me gagging from the bathroom. It is disgusting, and I got to keep it in for at least 15 seconds. And swoosh, he said. It is disgustingly tasting stuff. But I had calls all day today. Mm-hmm. It's the only way I made it through the phone call. So I'm trying to do this show, folks.
With a numb tongue?
No, without lidocaine. It wears off. It doesn't last.
Okay.
Because I'm disgusted by it, hence the water.
That seems better tasting. Less numbing, better tasting. They should put that on the side of the bottle.
Less numbing, better tasting. Yeah. It is true. So I'm not looking for sympathy. I just want you to know what I'm going through trying to do this show for you guys. I am going to be reading a lot from my notes because, again, Chris and I are not experts on these accounts. But I did learn a lot, and you'll learn a lot, and our listeners.
Yeah, I didn't go, so I didn't. I don't have the copious notes.
So let's get into ABLE accounts and how they interact, the rules, advantages, disadvantages, and how they compare and work with special needs trusts. That is the title verbatim from this part of the notebook. He gives us some impressive amounts of notes. I'll give him that much. This guy must have nothing to do but sit here and write all this stuff. Okay, so what is an ABLE account? Well, the Department of Acronyms did pretty good on this one. Hmm. ABLE stands for Achieving a Better Life Experience.
Oh, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah. ABLE, Achieving a Better Life Experience. It was part of the 2014 Tax Cuts and it was updated by the recent Tax Cuts and Job Act, but it was part of a act in 2014. So it's been around for 5 years, ABLE accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And they are essentially a special account. They were created under the same rules that created 529 college savings plans.
Yeah.
So ABLE accounts are administered by states, just like 529 plans.
Right. And that's why they just added an A to the end, 529 ABLE. That's where. So they still are technically under the umbrella of 529 plans.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll read a little bit about what Ed wrote about them. I try to say it in Ed's Brooklyn accent, but there's no way I can do a Brooklyn accent. Every time I talk, because I talk a lot at that meeting, he calls me Boston Jim. Well, now I'm Birdman.
Aren't you Birdman?
Yeah, I'm Birdman now, but he used to be Boston Jim. And he would always pause and point out my accent and laugh, and I would be Ed.
People should be careful of that, because some people find that condescending.
Well, Ed would laugh. And I used to be Ed. Have you ever heard yourself talk?
Right. Yeah, I've heard him talk.
You're from Brooklyn.
Right, yeah.
But he always points out to the whole Ed Slot group, all 400 people, oh, that's Boston Jim. Well, now I'm Birdman. And I got to explain on another show why he gave me the nickname Birdman. It has nothing to do with the show Birdman. Who was that? That wasn't Robert Redford. That was the other guy, short little guy. The guy in...
Dustin Hoffman?
Dustin Hoffman. Didn't he play... Yeah, he was the guy
Birdman
in Little Big
Alcatraz?
Man.
Oh, Little Big Man. That's different. There's...
No, wasn't Dustin Hoffman also the Birdman?
I don't recall now.
Oh, is that Tom
Those
Cruise?
Are movies I haven't seen for a long time.
Oh, was it Tom Cruise was the Birdman? No, it was Dustin Hoffman as Birdman.
In Little Big Man?
No, not in Little... He was in Little Big Man.
Right.
But I think Dustin... Wasn't there a movie called Birdman?
The Birdman of Alcatraz.
No, I thought there was just a movie called Birdman where he played someone with autism.
No, that was... No.
No, am I getting my movie screwed up?
Yeah.
There's no Birdman from autism?
No. You go on and I'll tell you because it's right at the top of my head. As soon as you talk about something else, it'll come to me.
All right. Well, apparently I don't know movies either, folks. So I have some sort of condition that's keeping me from talking. I'm sucked up on lidocaine. And I don't know anything about Dustin Hoffman. Okay, so what is an ABLE account? An ABLE account is designed to be a savings account for disability-related expenses of beneficiaries that will supplement...
Rain Man.
Rain Man,
yeah.
Instead of Birdman.
Right. I had no idea that was the direction you were going. And after you said Birdman, then it blew Rain Man out of my mind, so I couldn't get to it. But yeah, it's Rain Man.
And that was Dustin Hoffman.
Yes, and he was the autistic brother. I'm a very good driver, remember?
Yeah, it's been so long since that movie came out.
Yeah, but no.
Okay, so ABLE accounts are designed to be savings accounts for the disability-related expenses of beneficiaries that will supplement but does not supplant benefits provided through private insurance, SSI, Medicaid, and any employment income that the beneficiary may have. In other words, folks, an ABLE account is meant to be used in addition to government benefits and are not specifically designed to not jeopardize, and are specifically designed to not jeopardize those benefits.
Thus the acronym ABLE, right? Achieve a better life experience.
Exactly.
If they took away other benefits when you got these instead, they're not improving anything. They're just substituting, where this is meant to make things better for the beneficiary that has the disability.
And one thing I want to point out that Ed pointed out, and I wrote it down, so this is my notes. They are not, and I underlined the word not, they are not designed to amass great wealth. They are designed more to give money to a disabled person for spending and improving their independence. So many people poo-poo, Chris, ABLE accounts. Oh, you can't save much. They don't grow to much. Or... as you'll see in a minute, if the beneficiary dies, the government can come back in and take from the ABLE account.
The state Medicaid system can say, oh, look, we shouldn't have paid so much because they had these assets after they're gone. And the justification is now they've passed away, so they don't need those funds to improve their life.
And advisors out there are telling people not to open ABLE accounts because of that. Mm. And what Ed's group wanted to point out was, look, that's an advisor who doesn't understand what the hell these accounts were created for.
You're missing the point of the account.
They were designed to allow people to funnel money into them for a beneficiary who could then use them to supplement SSI payments, Medicaid payments, employment if they're lucky enough to have a job, and still qualify for government benefits if used correctly. They're designed to be used, not to amass wealth. Whereas a special needs trust can be used to amass wealth. They are not designed to amass wealth. And that was probably the biggest thing, or one of the big things that I took out of this session. And it got me to look at them differently as well, because I looked at all the other articles. Oh, you don't want to open up Able accounts. They're going to claw it back. They're going to take that money. They're going to do this, do that. They're not designed to amass money. They're designed really to funnel money through. And Ed gives us an example of that, Chris, that I'll share with you in a little bit. Okay, so I already said ABLE accounts are established under Section 529 of the tax code, so they are administered by the states. An ABLE account is also a tax-favored account, folks. It will grow tax-deferred, and the distributions can be tax-free if used correctly. An ABLE account can accept contributions for an eligible blind or disabled individual who is the designated beneficiary. The designated beneficiary is also the owner of the account and has control over the funds.
That's different
mm-hmm. than any other type of account most people are used to. There's the owner and there's the beneficiary. The beneficiary of my IRA, which is my dad, he can't call up my IRA provider and say, hey, I'm the beneficiary. My son ain't here. Give me the money. It's not going to work that way.
Same thing with a 529.
Exactly.
The parent controls still, even though a particular youngin is named as the beneficiary. So built on the 529 chassis, that is very different, where the beneficiary has the rights of the owner for an ABLE account.
And an ABLE account is disregarded, folks, for the purpose of determining eligibility for benefits under SSI, which is Supplemental Security Income. Why don't you explain what SSI is for Social Security?
It's part of the Social Security system, essentially, but it's what a lot of people refer to slang term as welfare. It's meant for very, very low or zero income individuals, to provide them with a living income to assist them if they happen to fall below very, very low thresholds of income for themselves. So it's a form of a government assistance program.
Okay. So an ABLE account is disregarded for determining eligibility for SSI and certain other government benefits that are means tested. So they're designed to allow other people to put money into an account that the beneficiary actually has control over. Look at the acronym name, folks. ABLE. It's designed to allow disabled people, Chris, to feel as if they are involved in their own finances. They're able. They have ability to do things. But it allows you to put money into them and not ruin the beneficiary's chance, as long as you follow the rules, of getting SSI and certain other means-tested government benefits. I think it's a wonderful idea. Currently, 42 states have ABLE programs. Most of the other 8 states are in development of creating ABLE programs. And just like the 529 plans, Chris, most states allow out-of-state beneficiaries to open accounts in their state. So you can choose and shop, Chris, just like for 529 plans, for different ABLE accounts. Hey, mm-hmm. I like the one in this state better. I like the custodian or the investment options, or the 800 number gets picked up quicker than my state. You don't have to open it in your state. So Ed suggested, he writes, this allows those interested in setting up ABLE accounts to shop around, compare fees, investment choices, availability of income tax benefits, and the ability to link debit, prepaid cards, or checking and savings accounts to give the beneficiary easier access. In other words, he's saying, shop around. Some are really good, some aren't. You're not locked in to just the one in your state. Make sense so far?
So far, good, yeah.
A beneficiary can have just one ABLE account. So you can't open multiple ABLE accounts. You can only have one. So give a lot of forethought to where you're going to open, the state you're going to open this ABLE account in. Okay, who can you open an ABLE account for? The ABLE Act limits eligibility to individuals who became disabled before age 26.
Yep.
But you can open it for a beneficiary of any age as long as he or she became disabled before age 26.
Which means if you have, say, a 35 or 40-year-old disabled person, as long as they were disabled before 26, age 26, you can open it for them. You don't have to have it opened by the time they're 26. You can open it anytime as long as they were disabled prior to age
Now, Sarah
26.
In the group, who's one of the minions at the Ed Slot program, there's Sarah, Andy, some new guy, I can't remember his name. I'm bad with names anyways. Actually, I think it's Jim. No, that's my name. But it might be Jim. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he's a new guy. Mm-hmm. So Sarah was talking at this point, and I wrote down what she said. And I didn't realize this. So she interrupted and said, legislation has been introduced to remove the age 26 barrier. Mm. And then she went on to explain that politicians are hearing a lot. So if you have someone who falls into this, get a hold of your politician. Get a hold of your congressmen and senators. Politicians are hearing a lot of slack that, hey, you realize people can become disabled
after 26.
Age 26.
Yeah.
This limit, it seems arbitrary, capricious, just pulled out of thin air.
Yep.
And enough people have been complaining. So I would strongly suggest, listeners, if you, or even if you don't have anyone you know and you just feel this is unfair, send a letter or an email to your congressmen and senators to support any legislation. She didn't mention the legislation's name, but support any legislation that's going to remove this arbitrary age 26 limit on ABLE accounts.
Yeah.
So anyways, I always remember that, and I wrote that down in my notes. Okay. So how do you know if a disabled individual is eligible to have an ABLE account opened for them? Well, if either of these two rules, if either of these two eligibility rules apply, they will be covered. Either. First, he or she is entitled to benefits based on blindness or disability under Title II or Title XV1. What the hell number is that?
16.
Title 16 of the Social Security Act. So either Title II or 16 of the Social Security Act, he can open or she can open up an ABLE account. Or he files a disability certification with the ABLE program, including his diagnosis related to his impairment, signed by a physician. And he must certify one of the following. A, he is blind. Or B, he has a medically determinable physical or mental impairment, which results in a marked and severe functional limitation, which can be expected to last for a continuous period of no less than 12 months, or may even result in his death or demise. So those are the rules in order to open an ABLE account. Pretty much covers most disabled people, I would assume. I don't think it covers, just because you receive Social Security disability doesn't mean you're going to be able to get an ABLE account.
That's the number one thing.
Oh, that's
that was the first
thing?
One. Oh. The first. If you qualify for Social Security disability,
well, I guess I mean to say just because you qualify for disability under disability insurance.
Correct. Those are far more lenient. So just because maybe you got hurt or something on the job and you have some type of lingering what in some cases would be called a disability, it may not rise to the level of qualifying for an ABLE account or Social Security disability. Those of you who have looked into it, Social Security disability has a very, very high bar of qualification. ABLE accounts have a slightly lower bar because they have that second way to get in, but it's still a pretty high bar. It's got, you know, the wording there about the, you can read it again, the wording on how severe the disability has to be, Jim, but it's not just something small. It's got to be something noticeable, medically determinable. So one of these, well, I don't know what it is. I don't think it's going to count. It's going to, like, you're, I can't talk, so I get an ABLE account. That's not going to count.
I have a sore throat and my doctor has me on lidocaine. Doesn't
count. That's not going to count.
No. Okay. If a beneficiary is unable to open their own, people ask this all the time, can it be opened for him? Absolutely.
Yes. Yep.
His agent, under a power of attorney, or his parent or legal guardian can easily establish an ABLE for someone who's not able, no pun intended, to open their own. How much can be contributed? Well, the annual contribution from an ABLE are limited to about $15,000 for 2019. However,
it can be a lot higher than that.
Huh?
Can be a lot higher than that.
What can be?
Contribution limit.
Well, I'm going to read what I have unless you have more.
Well, go ahead.
If you have more, then you can add more. However, under the Tax Cuts and Job Act, it expanded the ABLE account contribution rules to allow an employed ABLE account beneficiary to make additional contributions to the lesser of their compensation for the tax year or the poverty line of about $12,490.
Yeah, that was the part I was talking about.
Okay.
So you can put in the 15. This isn't a substitute. You can put in the 15 whether the disabled person has a job or compensation or not. On top of that, if they have earnings, if they have a little part-time job, maybe they're not completely and fully disabled, they have a little part-time job earning some money, up to another $12,500 roughly could be contributed, maxed, capped at either their earnings or that 12,400 number that Jim mentioned. So about $27,000 is technically the ceiling on a contribution in any given year, but that would require the disabled person to have some compensation.
Perfect. Okay, so the extra amount is only allowed if the beneficiary is working. Also, contributions are not a deduction at the federal level. ABLE accounts work more like Roth IRAs, folks. You put after-tax money in. So you don't get a deduction putting money in for your disabled son or daughter, and you can. You can put up to... Or disabled friend, it doesn't have to be a family member, you can put in, or the recipient, the beneficiary can receive up to $15,000 a year. Now remember, these are not designed for accumulation. It's really designed to funnel money. It's almost like money laundering. You're going to put money in, and they're going to take it out right away and still qualify for a lot of benefits that might not have been able to have been done if they didn't do it that way.
Right. That and any growth that happens will be completely tax-free.
The growth would be
so it's kind of like a 529, a regular 529. There's no federal tax deduction, but growth can come out for qualified expenses tax-free. I think for the ABLE accounts, they still get the state tax deduction like you do on a 529 education plan, if I'm not mistaken. So what Jim mentioned about federal deductibility is definitely true. It's not deductible, these contributions at the federal level. But I think in most states, they have the state deductibility like regular 529 plans do.
Okay. You can, the Tax Cuts and Job Act that was recently passed allows rollovers from a 529 plan to an ABLE account.
Hmm.
So that's another way of getting money into an ABLE account. However, it's got to be for the same beneficiary. So if you've opened a 529 plan for your disabled child and they didn't go to school or they got scholarships or something and there's still money in it, you can now, as long as it's the same beneficiary, roll over the 529 count for a member of for that beneficiary or a member of the same family. but it does count towards the annual contribution amount. It's very similar to the ability of one-time only. This is not a one-time only thing, but that one-time only transfer from an IRA to an HSA.
Yeah, I see that.
That counts towards that year's contribution.
This today is successful.
What's successful?
Every day you learn something new is a successful day. That I had no idea. I didn't know you could roll over from your regular 529 in there. Good news.
For the same beneficiary or in the same family. Same family member.
Yeah.
Okay. So we talked about how contributions are more like a Roth. Here's an interesting part. Contributions to an ABLE account are not excluded from income for government benefit purposes. So if your employed child is putting their own money in, remember they can put up their compensation for the tax year or the poverty line of $12,490. That does not reduce their income, though, for the purpose of government benefits. It's not being reduced on their income. They're just getting it into the ABLE account. What it does allow them to do is allow that money to grow tax-free. But it's not going. It's not like, ooh, I earned too much. I'm going to lose my government benefit. Let me open an ABLE account and get some money.
So it's not a workaround to the limits.
No. Okay. So what is the point, folks, of using an ABLE account? So Ed had did a whole section. What is the benefit of using an ABLE account? What is the tax benefit he begins with? Any amount distributed from an ABLE account that is used that is used to pay for qualified disability expenses will be tax and penalty free, including the earnings. And of course, if you do a distribution that is not used to fund a qualified disability, you will pay taxes and a 10% penalty. Does that make sense? Okay. The penalty will not apply, however, to distributions from an ABLE account on the account of the person's death. Just like an IRA, the 10% early withdrawal penalty goes away to the person inheriting it. So a distribution due to the death of the disability person, a disabled person, will not result in the 10% penalty.
Although if they're susceptible in a lot of states, I think all but five that offer these, there's just a handful that that bar the Medicaid office from going after ABLE account balances. It's likely there's no penalty, but it's probably gone.
It's gone anyway,
because so they're going to take it anyway. Except for there are five states right now that don't do that. Just a little tidbit. You might be getting to that later. I don't know.
Yep, he does get into it. So what kind of expenses are a qualified disability expense that will allow a beneficiary to withdraw money? Okay, a qualified disability expense includes any for housing, education, transportation, employment training, assistive technology, health, prevention, wellness, financial management, administration, legal, and expenses for oversight and monitoring, and funeral and burial expenses of the beneficiary. So quite a lot of expenses. He just gave the main categories. You can see this probably represents hundreds, if not thousands, of different potential individual expenses. If they fall into these very broad categories. Okay, can you change beneficiary of an ABLE account without triggering a taxable event? What do you think?
Well, that's a good question. Because there'd have to be a limit to maybe another family member, because if you could change it to any other disabled person, you could completely avoid Medicaid taking the balance when a person died. So I'm going to say yes within the same family.
Yes, provided the new beneficiary also is a qualifying disabled person and is a member of the family of the former beneficiary.
I won.
You got it. So very good. Okay. So how does an ABLE account interact with the various state and federal benefits that a disabled person may otherwise receive. Well, up to $100,000 can be accumulated within an ABLE account without impacting any means-tested federal programs other than housing expense distributions under SSI.
Right. So this is something, too. It effectively caps the useful balance in the 529 for anyone who's getting means-tested benefits like SSI. In some states, the balances can be much, much higher, way higher, actually, because just like in some states, you can have enormous 529 education account balances. But the practical limit for anyone who's on SSI is going to be this $100,000 limit, because otherwise you're going to jeopardize significant government benefits simply to have this massive balance in your ABLE, which would not be a good trade-off. So in most circumstances, you should consider the effective limit on balances in the 529 to be $100,000.
And that's why Ed goes on to say, if a beneficiary's ABLE account exceeds the $100,000 limit, their SSI will be suspended.
Yeah, bad news there.
But their Medicaid treatments will remain unaffected. Now, he pointed out the obvious. Some states have very high limits of contributions of $300,000 or more. And he told us, because these are coming from my handwritten notes, but that makes no sense with the $100,000 limit I, meaning Ed, just described. His point is, so some states let you put in up to $300,000. What good is it?
Right.
You get more than $100,000 in there, the beneficiary is going to lose SSI benefits.
Yeah. Yep.
So Ed said this makes no sense.
I agree with Ed.
And he went on to say, remember, these accounts are designed, this is from my handwritten notes, to be transactional. That's the point he's trying to make. Mm-hmm. Money goes in and money is going to come out. The beneficiary can take the money out. Because they're tied to checking accounts and debit accounts, it makes the disabled person feel, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, quote unquote, normal. In the sense, they have a debit account. They have a credit card account. They have a checking account. They can go out and take care of themselves. It makes them feel enabled, if you will. So
it's just a different kind of trajectory. You actually want to, maybe if someone has a long lifespan left where the account could stick around for a while, you might let it grow for a while, but then they're going to be using it. You wouldn't want to restrict their use of it, not like, oh, hands off until later. No, the point is they want to use it currently, but you might shovel in enough where it might grow for a while. But then if the medical system, their situation changes or degrades and their lifespan suddenly looks a lot shorter, you want to drain that thing as fast as possible because of the deadline you have with the Medicaid office taking any balance that's left over.
Right.
So there's different forces at work here. There's different incentives for the use of what's in these accounts, and they should be treated as what they are, and they're this kind of unique animal that they are.
Exactly. So my notes from the meeting say they should not be viewed as savings accounts for earnings. They are designed to be transactional and not wealth, growth, and accumulation. So many advisors, I think, investment advisors, miss that boat on ABLEs. And they, you don't want to open them. And you're going to lose them when the beneficiary dies. As Ed says, you don't want any money in there. It's transactional. You're going to funnel money in and funnel money out and not lose access to benefits and allow the disabled person you are trying to help feel like they have a normal life and a normal financial ability.
And it seems like this is I know we haven't gotten to this yet, so I hope I'm not jumping the gun too much, but the reason for a lot of special needs trusts, which are very complex legal instruments that are created, quite expensive in a lot of cases to create them, are designed to accomplish what is being accomplished here, which is a way to get money or resources to a disabled person without disqualifying them for the benefits they could get from the government. So here's a way, there's really little or no cost of setting up an ABLE account. So now you can't funnel a whole bunch in there. There's this effective $100,000 limit, but you can do a lot for a little cost and a little effort now instead of the big, it's almost like here's a little tool that maybe for a lot of people is perfectly effective for what they want to do. You don't have to roll out the big expensive tool that is the special needs trust, except for those unique cases where the ABLE account isn't enough to do it.
I think this should be both. I think the special needs trust and an ABLE account for a lot of severely disabled person would be good.
Depends on the resources of the family, though.
Correct.
Because if they just don't have enough to effectively do anything in the trust, the ABLE would be a way to do a little bit, at least.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that. Okay. What happens when a beneficiary dies? When a beneficiary dies, funds remaining in the ABLE account after the payment of any outstanding qualified disability expenses, including funeral and burial expenses, may be used to reimburse the state for Medicaid-related services. Some states have passed laws that would prohibit or limit this Medicaid payback provision. Information about these rules can be found on the State ABLE Plan website. Remaining ABLE funds are payable to the beneficiary's estate. So some states have written their own laws that prohibit Medicaid from clawing back.
California, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Oregon, and Florida currently.
Okay, so we do have a couple. Mm-hmm. Where are you getting all that from? Oh, the internet.
Mr. Kitsis.
I was going to say, that looks like Kitsis' website. Is there anything that man doesn't write about?
No, and this is just, I don't know if this is timing for you, if it's accident, this just came out. The only reason I even know what I'm contributing here is because I read this blog post about a week ago.
Oh, I had no idea. No.
Yeah, this just came out like October 30th.
No,
it was all about the proper use and care of ABLE accounts.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's why I just divulged why I don't sound as much of a genius. I'm not reading totally from notes,
but
though.
There are some states who are saying, hey, we don't like this provision.
Yeah.
We're going to get
so there's
rid
a
of
hand,
that.
Handful, and he...
I personally, I don't have a problem with that provision, and I don't see why people do. Why should taxpayers use their money to support your disabled child if your disabled child has a little bit of money left over? Why can't the taxpayers be reimbursed so they can use that money to help someone else's disabled child? Why should it go to non-disabled family members? I don't get that.
Right.
That's I don't understand what the big deal with that is.
I agree. I mean, from an individual's family standpoint, I'm sure they would like it back. But in the grand schemes of society, I think I agree
society
with you.
Society has stepped up and said, hey, we're going to help your child. Well, if your child passes away and has a lot of money, why doesn't your child essentially say, you know what, society, you helped me. Now I want to help someone else.
Yeah,
I don't get why people make a big beef over that. That was my point. There was one gentleman in the Ed Slot group who hated ABLE accounts. And oh my God, did he make everyone in the room know. And it was because, and he was very angry on it. And I think he had a disabled child, so I didn't want to say anything and start an argument with him. I think he shared that with us. And he hates this clawback provision. And he was so against it and vocally voiced it to the group. I mean, angrily voiced it to the group. Hmm. And I just sat there and shut up because I felt, no, this man has a disabled child. I don't, so I don't see what he's seeing. But even my colleague next to me, who I won't mention his name, turned to me and said, I don't understand what the big deal is.
Right.
It should go back to the state, my colleague said. It was the money from the state was used to help his child.
Right. I agree.
And as Ed pointed out, these accounts are not designed to accumulate wealth. You want to accumulate wealth and make sure it can be passed on, use a special
Something
needs
else.
Trust.
Right. Exactly.
But if you want to help your disabled child live an independent life and feel abled when everyone else says they're disabled, I think these are wonderful accounts. Mm-hmm. And who cares if there's 10 grand left in it or 100 grand left in it, and the state had provided, if the state only provided your child with 30,000 of help,
They're only going to take
30. So if there's 10 in there, they'll take all 10. But if there's 100 in there, they'll only take the 30. I don't see what's wrong with that. Anyways, that's just me. Okay, some advantages that Ed listed to us of what he thought advantages to ABLE accounts would be. And you just hit on some of these, Pete.
Chris.
What I would have said if Pete was here. Chris. ABLE accounts are easy and inexpensive to open.
Yep.
You hinted on that. Mm-hmm. The beneficiary actually has a say in when and how his money or her money will be used. Mm-hmm. It involves them. I like that. What I've been saying, as Ed pointed out, beneficiaries will gain financial independence and actually can learn money management skills. They're not dependent on everyone trying to take care of them and pay their bills and do this and do that. It gives them freedom. It also allows the beneficiary an opportunity to accumulate their own savings of up to $100,000, remember that limit, without affecting their government benefits. This far exceeds the limit of $2,000 in the beneficiary's name for most means-tested government benefits. That's a huge difference. I think they're great just for that. Open the account for the child. Let them feel. Especially, I like how the Tax Cuts and Job Act allowed, hey, if I'm working, I can actually put some of my own money in this beyond the money my family is helping me with. And it allows the ABLE account owner, I feel, to feel empowered. I like that. Okay, multiple people can contribute to an ABLE account. We already mentioned that. Okay. Savers credit may still be available. I don't want to get too deep into that. That gets into retirement savings. But that was added under the Tax Cuts and Job Act. ABLE accounts are easy to use because they're often linked to debit cards and checking accounts. They grow tax-free. Some states will offer an income tax deduction. Not all. You have to check.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was talking about.
And rollovers from 529s are allowed. These are all Ed's advantages. So what are the disadvantages according to Ed? SSI benefits, but not Medicaid, is suspended if the account exceeds $100,000.
They can avoid that by just not allowing it to get over $100,000.
Medicaid clawback after the beneficiary's death. Again, I don't feel that's a problem, but I'm not the one putting the money in. I get it. Some people have an issue with that. As a taxpayer, I don't have a problem with it. If you're going to use my taxes to help disabled people, I have no problem with that. But I think disabled people who have the ability to pay back at their death, it's not like we're trying to take it when they're alive, I have no problem with that either. I don't. That's just me. Okay. Only one ABLE account per person. I, again, don't feel that that's a problem. You don't want to open multiple and get really complicated. But Ed does have that listed as a disadvantage. Contributions are limited to just $15,000 a year. I'd like to see that higher since you can amass up to $100,000. So I agree with Ed. That's a disability. And the biggest one, in his opinion and mine, only permitted for those disabled before age 26, rather. That's just
That should be changed.
That needs to be removed. That needs to be removed totally. Okay, so how does a special needs trust and an ABLE account interact? This is the last section we're going to go over. And it's just a few more pages, so which is good. My tongue is killing me. Okay. Both ABLE accounts and special needs trust should be viewed as a tool, Chris, to be used and to help supplement means-tested government benefits without affecting a qualifying disabled individual's eligibility for them. That's essentially what they're designed for. Mm-hmm. However, special needs trusts and ABLE accounts are governed under very different rules. I'm going to try to get Pete, who I just called you just a second ago, he and I went out to lunch before he went gallivanting around the country again not too long ago. And I talked to him about Jan Lord, and he feels Jan will come back on and talk about special needs trusts. or at least call into the show. And he's going to chat with her when he gets back. So, Jan, if you just happen to be listening, Pete's going to suck you into this again. Jan, for those who don't know, she was on a radio show, I mean, long, long, long time ago. So a lot of podcast listeners, unless you're a dedicated listener and remember her name, won't remember Jan Lord. But in Northern Colorado, she has a reputation as being an extremely knowledgeable special needs trust attorney. This woman knows Medicaid and special needs like the back of her hand.
Yeah, she specializes in elder care and disability and special needs issues for estate planning. Yeah. Yep.
So I want her to come in and talk about special needs trusts. I'm not going to talk about them right now, and neither did Ed. What he wanted to talk about is how a special needs trust and an ABLE account can actually interact with each other in a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. I just kept thinking.
I can read your mind.
Right. Mm-hmm. What is it? There's a symbiotic relationship out there with a tree. I forget. Something grows on a tree. What is it that's growing?
A lichen?
I don't know if it was a lichen
or moss or something.
Else. There was something that I think it might have been lichens, but they're in a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. Right. They're
helping each other.
Giving the tree some food and the tree's getting something from them, whatever. Mm-hmm. So how does the Special Needs Trust Enable account interact that way? Okay. So here is where Ed kind of broke it down into giving the edge to a ABLE account or a special needs trust. So he says, amounts that can be safeguarded without impacting government benefits. He gives the edge, special needs trusts. Unlimited amounts can be gifted and left to a third-party special needs trust. That's a special needs trust created by a third party. I think it's called primary party or first party special needs trust is one the disabled person establishes themselves. A third party special needs trust is established by someone else. That's why I want to get Jan on here to make sure I'm giving correct info on that. Okay, so you can get much more into a third party special needs trust than you can into an ABLE account because you got that $100,000 limit. And once an ABLE account grows above $100,000, SSI benefits are suspended. So he gives the edge to the special needs trust. Use of funds. He gives the edge to special needs trusts. He says, while Section 529A ABLE account's definition of a qualifying disability expenses is fairly liberal, special needs trust drafted with appropriate language can allow for even more expenses. So he's just, and notice how he worded it. Drafted with the appropriate language.
That's important.
There's some attorneys who are dumb and don't know, as well as other attorneys, the proper language. So if you got a good attorney and they draft a good trust, Ed is saying it can even be more liberal than an ABLE account. But he freely admits ABLE accounts are fairly liberal in their wording, but you can get even better. Tax efficiency. Who do you think the edge is to?
Tax efficiency?
Mm-hmm.
I think the ABLE account, because we don't have to worry about taxability inside it while stuff is inside.
Very good. He writes, edge to ABLE account big time with an exclamation point. Any income that is generated by a special needs trust and not paid out of the trust to the beneficiary will be subject to the brutal compressed trust tax rates.
Yeah.
In short, more than $12,500 of earnings inside a special needs trust will be taxed at the highest marginal rate, which is currently 37%, not counting state taxes. And it's going up to 39.6, when the Trump tax cuts expire in 2026. Right.
And any earnings inside the Able account aren't taxed at all while they stay inside there. They're able to grow tax deferred and they come out tax free if for an eligible disability expense. So,
exactly. Because
so it's a huge difference.
Right. And a distribution from the special needs trust will be taxed at the recipient's rate, which again will be a lot lower, but it's not received tax free. So big time tax efficiency to the ABLE account. This one, I know everyone is going to know this one, but I'll let you answer it, Chris. Legacy to be left to the family or future beneficiaries.
Trust all the way.
Trust all the
no,
way.
No competition yep. there.
He didn't put a big time on that, but he said EDGE, special needs trust. I would say.
I'll say big time.
Big time.
Yeah.
Exclamation point. Any amount left in a person's ABLE account at the time of death may first be used to repay publicly provided benefits. We already talked about that, but we talked about some states that are exempting that, and Chris listed the states. This will probably wipe out the balance in most ABLE accounts. In contrast, a special needs trust is established, and if established and implemented properly, the assets in the special needs trust at the person's death can be left to other heirs. So again, and I sympathize with that advisor who was very angry in the group and saying he will never use special needs trust because of the clawback. I get that, especially if you're used to using a special needs trust and you feel your assets can be left to other children of yours who are not disabled. But as a taxpayer, I don't have a problem with the clawback. I really don't. Okay. Cost and complexity, Chris. EDGE goes to?
ABLE accounts.
ABLE account, exactly. Trusts, as Ed writes, are very expensive to create and to continue to administer and monitor. Yep. They also add a lot of complexity. ABLE accounts, on the other hand, have minimal expenses and are fairly simple to implement. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, ABLE account, special needs trust, or both? What should you do? Here's Ed's opinion, and I'll just read verbatim from what Ed shared with us. It's tempting when discussing ABLE accounts and special needs trust to compare the two and just stop there. But that is short-sighted. There is no need to choose. There is no restrictions on using both a special needs trust and ABLE account for the same beneficiary. In fact, as ABLE accounts become common, more and more planners are starting to use both. And this, to me, me personally too as well, makes sense given their very different characteristics. A special needs trust is a tool for your long-term planning for a disabled individual. A parent can use the special needs trust to fund a third-party special needs trust. Remember, that's one not created by the disabled person. It's created by someone else. To create a third-party special needs trust, and here we go, Chris, and fund it with life insurance proceeds long after they are gone. And again, we'll talk about this because we talked about it in the past. You don't want to fund a special needs trust with an IRA for a variety of reasons, unless it's a Roth IRA. There is no limit on the amount of funds that can go into a special needs trust. And it can be used for very specific estate planning strategies. And the grantor can the person opening the trust, can direct exactly where and what happens to any remaining funds after the beneficiary's death. So Ed is saying that's the special needs trust. But he's saying just don't use a special needs trust. Marry it with an ABLE account, because he continues. An ABLE account, on the other hand, is very different. We all know there is a limit on how much can be held in. That's the $100,000 he's talking about. And contributions are limited to just $15,000 a year. After the beneficiary's death, the funds may be subject to clawback. But given these restrictions, an ABLE account should be viewed as the transactional account with the goal of having easy access to limited funds and allowing the disabled person to live a more independent life. I like that. Mm-hmm. Marry the two of them. His point is it's not one or another. But he gave one example, and I want to wrap up with this one example because I thought it was a really good example. And we're only at one page left. So he says, here's an example of how an ABLE account can work with a special needs trust. When it comes to eligibility of government benefits for those with disabilities, rules are tricky. Here is what the Social Security's very own website says about distributions from a trust to a disabled person. Money paid directly to you from the trust will reduce your SSI benefits. Money paid directly to someone to provide you with food, shelter, will reduce your SSI benefits, but only up to a certain limit. No matter how much money is paid for food and shelter, we will subtract no more than $277 in 2019 from your SSI check in the month you receive those benefits or those items. Money paid directly to someone to provide you with these items other than food and shelter will not reduce your SSI benefits. Items that are not food and shelter include medical care, telephone bills, your education expenses, entertainment, etc. If you go to the Social Security website, they explain all that. But there's a lot of important things in there, especially that second paragraph, Chris, where it says money paid directly to someone to provide you with food or shelter reduces your SS benefit, but only up to $277. Okay, but money paid to someone to provide items not including food and shelter does not reduce your SSI. But money paid directly to you from a special needs trust for anything else will reduce your SSI. So here's what Ed says. Here's what Ed says. This means distributions paid from a special needs trust for housing will reduce the SSI benefits, as Ed says, big time. Mm-hmm. Because that $277 limit doesn't apply. That $277 limit applies. Money paid directly to someone to provide you with food or shelter will reduce your SSI. So, step one, the special needs trust can make an ABLE contribution. This is permitted. So follow Ed's logic here. Government officials have confirmed that distributions from a special needs trust that are contributed to the same beneficiary's ABLE account will not count as income for resources of Medicaid or SSI eligibility. And then he references the part of the Medicare that addresses that, and it's too long for me to read. So we're just going to trust Ed on that. So what he's saying, money coming from a special needs trust going into an ABLE account is not going to reduce Medicaid or SSI payments. Then the ABLE account will make regular housing payments on behalf of the disabled person. This would be a qualified disability distribution under ABLE account rules and will not negatively affect their government benefits. So if the money came from the trust, Chris, it would. But if it comes from the special needs trust, from the ABLE account, it won't. So he was trying to describe kind of funneling it through. Mm-hmm. Now, I see you constantly looking at what Kitsis wrote. Is there a disagreement between Ed and Kitsis?
No, they added that there's something about the timing of doing that, that it needs to go in and out the same month without to avoid another side effect, which I'm not sure Ed got into.
Ed didn't get into that.
So there may be, that might be part of this, so keep that in mind.
What did Kitsis say about it?
It's actually Kitsis's tax expert guy.
Oh, is that Jeff?
Jeff.
Yeah, I know Jeff quite well. I was going to say, I bet you Jeff wrote that, not Mike.
Yeah, no, Jeff wrote this, and he talked about how you can avoid the in-kind support and maintenance problem. That's the name of when you pay in-kind. You pay someone else, like a family member were to pay your rent for you. That's an in-kind payment. But it would reduce your SSI if they make that, just like the trust paying that like mm-hmm. that. A person causes the same issue. But if you run it through the ABLE accounts, as long as it goes in and out, it's not considered an in-kind. But he didn't really expand on why it had to go in and out the same month. But he did say that was the case.
Okay.
So just...
Well, like we said at the beginning, folks, Chris and I are not experts on this. This is why if this is your first time ever listening to this podcast, I do not normally just read Ed Slott notes. What I do is I talk about our planning strategies, and Chris and I very rarely read anything on this show except emails from listeners.
Well, I take it back. What happens in the month is the disbursement from the ABLE account to the disabled person. They need to pay their rent that month.
Oh, yeah.
Not hold on to it.
Oh, no, that
That's what it was.
No,
that's
no.
what it is. Sorry, yeah. I misread it a little bit.
That applies to mostly any benefit when you do that. No, absolutely. Yeah. But you see, two things. So if you're a new listener... Chris and I don't normally just read like we did today, so I hope you don't think today was boring. Today was a very specific EDU show for a very specific audience. It is for pre- and post-retirees who are trying to help and fund and protect their disabled children. So it's a very narrow focus
today. Or grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. So it's not going to apply to everyone. And because Chris and I are not experts in this, I just happened to attend a training session that spent a good 2 hours going over all this with us. And as I was sitting there learning it, I thought to myself, my listeners can benefit from this. But I'm not going to try to do this show and pretend I know all about them. I admitted at the beginning, I'm going to read a lot of Ed's notes, Ed being Ed Slott, to the group. Because I think his notes are written in a way that make easy sense for people to understand. So hopefully people with disabled children learned a little today. I know I did when I attended this. And hopefully you got something from it. On most other shows, Chris and I are just winging it and firing away. And that's how we prefer to do it. There's no script. I guess we can no longer say we don't... Read from notes.
You just did.
I just did. I spent the whole show.
Occasionally, there'll be a little snippet, a quote. We want to quote somebody on something or some new news release, and we'll read the little quote. But this was a little more substantial reading than normal. But it isn't a sign of shows to come. It's not.
No,
this isn't how we're typically going to handle.
No,
this.
I just thought this was really good.
It
and
was
it's not an area where we hold ourselves out as being experts in.
Well, we're somewhat familiar with it. That's about as all as I would claim.
Exactly, and we normally will send people to Jan Lord here in Northern Colorado, or Pete will find other attorneys in other states to go to, to set up these accounts. Special needs trusts being, I just thought people would like to learn, like I did, that ABLE accounts to me definitely have a position here, and especially to cover housing expenses. To funnel the money out of the special needs trust into the ABLE account and then pay. I thought that was a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. And not lose your SSI. I thought that was a really good strategy. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all I have to say. I'm going to go suck down another teaspoon or two of lidocaine.
It is almost dinner time. Well, thanks for sticking through it. I'm glad we got through that because I know we had several people that were disappointed that the show entitled about the ABLE accounts wasn't actually about ABLE accounts in the past. Now, this one really is. So
hopefully they won't write it about fees. Are you fed up with fees?
Right. So we want to remind everybody that we are practicing financial planner specializing in retirement planning here in Northern Colorado, although we help clients throughout the whole country. If you're interested in talking to us more about the services we provide in the area of retirement planning, please look us up on the internet. JimHelps.com is the best way to get a hold of us. You can also get there through ChrisHelps.com, but JimHelps.com was the first website, so I guess we'll quote that, and it is a little shorter to type than ChrisHelps.com. So JimHelps.com, you'll find a contact information on there as well as a contact form. You can submit questions for our Q&A show through that portal. You can also find the phone number to call us, speak to Laura or Shauna. Usually we'll take the phone call and can arrange a meeting, and we can perform with you what we call a coffee and a second opinion meeting, which is our introductory meeting where we'll chat a little bit about your situation. You'll share with us what your concerns are and what your goals are and what you're looking for as far as help in retirement planning, and we'll chat a bit about what we can offer you that might assist you in those areas. And that's free of charge, of course. Introductory meeting always is. But we really appreciate everybody listening. And if you would like some help with your personal situation, don't hesitate to reach out. Anything else? Oh, you muted yourself. So
perfect.
Go have fun with your lidocaine.
I will. Thanks.
We'll see everybody else next week.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.